is up. It is me, George G, and we've got another awesome episode of the Aligned Money Show coming your way featuring Andy Baxley. He's a fiduciary, financial advisor, CFP, a CIMA, a CEFT, a senior financial planner with the Planning Center. We had an awesome conversation about finding your financial purpose. We talked about making financial planning fun and more in depth and creating a creative retirement timeline, just rethinking. Instead of just saying, I'm going to retire at 65, really thinking about when it is you wanted to retire, what you want your life to look like. Talked about the importance of community and creativity. And when you create something, when you write something, when you make something, sharing it with the people that you care about and all the benefits that come with that. So it was an awesome conversation. I think that you are going to like it. Let's go. Andy, to get us started, let's do two truths and a lie.
All right. I've got some good ones for you here, George. So here they are. Number one, I've been to over 100 Chicago Bears games. Number two, my great-grandfather led the development of the moving assembly line for Ford Motor Company in 1913. And number three, I lived in Seoul, South Korea for 4 years.
Those are good ones. I bet the Bears game is a lie.
How did you know that?
Yes. It's all just guesswork. It's all just guesswork. I bet you've been to a lot of, if you've been to like 99 Bears games or something like that?
I've been to zero Bears games. I'm ashamed to say this because I do live in Chicago, but I've only been here 4 years or so now. And a good chunk of that time was COVID. And I have to admit, I'm also just not as big a football fan as I used to be. So no Bears games, but I do intend to go to one before I leave here one day.
Awesome. I love it. Well, I'm excited to have you on and dig into everything. What is top of mind for you right now?
You know, there's a few things that are top of mind right now. For me, I think the one that I'm thinking the most about right now is this idea of a statement of financial purpose. So this idea that, you know, I'm a financial advisor. I help clients with their money. And there's a lot of tactical advice I can give. I can tell you how to build your portfolio. I can tell you how much to save. I can tell you what types of insurance policies you should buy. But something that I've realized over the course of my career is, you know, if we don't tie all that advice into a deeper why, a deeper sense of purpose, that, you know, often the advice just ends up being bad. It might be a good rule of thumb. It might work for most people, but if you don't really understand what's important to the person that you're sitting across from, then I think the advice often just doesn't quite hit the mark. So I've been thinking a lot about my own statement of financial purpose. How do I help clients get clear on their statements of financial purpose? And once we've done so, how do we use that as a lens to look through whenever a financial decision or any life decision comes our way?
Well, I love it. That is music to my ears right there. I couldn't agree more. So it sounds like there's a benefit to the client, obviously, but then a benefit to you as the advisor as well, having clarity around that.
I think that's right. I think there's multiple benefits to both sides. For me, what I've experienced, you know, I've been experimenting with this idea for a while now. I first got it from Carl Richards in his book, The One-Page Financial Plan. And what I've noticed as I've done this work with clients is, you know, yes, it benefits me because whenever there's a big decision to be made, like I said, we now have that lens to look through when making that decision. And I think that just leads to better decision-making down the road. I've also noticed it leads to a lot more fun at work. These are really fun conversations to be having with people. And when you practice and learn how to have them skillfully, it just leads to much deeper, more in-depth meetings and really in-depth in the way that you want a meeting to be in-depth, not getting lost in the weeds behind the numbers and, you know, how's my portfolio doing compared to this benchmark, but again, taking that step back and exploring the deeper purpose. So I've loved what it's done for my relationships with clients. You know, I think my relationships with my clients is much closer. I've become a trusted thinking partner for them in a way that maybe I wasn't quite before. So yeah, it's been beneficial in a number of ways.
More fun. I am game for that for sure. Trusted thinking partner. I like that a lot. Tell me a little bit more.
Well, I think we can all probably agree, or most of us can agree. I certainly would say this about myself, that when it comes to other people's money, I can think really clearly about your money, George. I can think really clearly about what you should be doing. But when that same exact question comes my way, there's all kinds of biases and ego and, you know, the voice of my mom and dad, the voice of society, all these things that sort of come in and create this very interesting stew in my head that can really cloud my decision making and just make it really difficult for me to think clearly. So again, you know, if somebody else is asking me for advice, you can cut through all that really easily when it's somebody else, because you're separate from it, right? And I ultimately think that that's the role of a really good financial advisor, in addition to all that technical expertise, is somebody to sit beside you and say, okay, here are the facts. Here's what I hear you saying is important to you, and here's my perspective on that. And having that additional perspective often, I think, can be the difference between success, however you define that, and failure.
Wouldn't be interesting and probably a lot easier if everybody just walked in with a blank slate without any existing biases, or without feeling the pressure of assumptions from family or coworkers or neighbors and just society and everything else. But that's not how it goes. We have all of those things that we are just, that's just present. You could say that they're bad, some might be good, but it's there. And to pretend like they're not, and to pretend like those aren't influencing decisions is a bad idea. So changing the conversation and going deeper into, let's strip this away as best we can and find out what is really most important to you.
That's right. And one of the areas that I've always found really interesting as it pertains to all of this is retirement timelines. So when somebody comes to you and they say, I want to retire at 65, where do you think that number is coming from? You know, do you think that they actually want to retire at 65? Or they, you know, if you'd ask them when they were 10, you know, what's your deepest dream of retirement? They're gonna say, well, 65, that's the age. You know, no, of course not. That's not something that's naturally inside of us. That's a narrative that was told to us. And, you know, I think largely the idea of retiring at 65 or 67 or whatever it may be is kind of pegged to when we can claim Social Security. But I love this idea of creative retirement timelines, and that could be anything from earlier retirement, later retirement, phased retirement, periodic sabbaticals, any number of different ways you might get a little bit more creative with the timeline of your work life. I love exploring that with clients, because often, A, they just haven't really thought about it. They haven't thought about what's possible. And it's just this really obvious way in which, when we kind of step back and say, gosh, yeah, why do I want to retire in my 60s? What is it about my 60s that's special? And you realize, well, there's really nothing special about your 60s. Ultimately, it becomes a math problem, which we can solve, but then it's also a problem of what's important to you. And if you could design life however you wanted to design it, what would that look like? And that's a much more fun conversation than, you know, how do we just blindly follow this traditional 9-to-5 till we're 65 narrative?
That's so funny, right? 65. It's just such an arbitrary age. But what do you think? Like 90% of people would give you that number if just randomly asked.
Yeah. And I think that changes through time. I think that's right. I think it probably would be 90% or more. A couple hundred years ago, you asked me that question and say, what's retirement? What do you mean? When am I going to retire? I mean, a couple hundred years ago, you worked till you died. That was retirement, right? You worked till you died, or till you just simply weren't able to work anymore. Then with the advent of modern pensions and the Social Security system here in the United States, we started to think about that a little differently and say, okay, well, maybe we can step away from work and live another 10 years beyond our working life, and then see life expectancies increase here, especially in the last 100 years or so. Well, now we've got this sort of arbitrary age 65 thing that's pegged to pensions and Social Security. But then we also have this life expectancy of another 30 years beyond that for a lot of people. And the questions around, how do I fill that time? What exactly do I do with that time? And all of this is to say, I think it all comes together into this moment we have where we can start to question some of those assumptions and say, okay, we're living longer, we're healthier for longer. How do we actually want this to play out? And how do we maybe step outside of the box a little bit?
Yeah. Such a huge and fun opportunity, going back to that word fun, which probably people don't commonly associate with financial advice or money in general, but it's a whole world that opens up. Like, take out a blank canvas and whatever your favorite kind of writing utensil is, if it's a crayon or some markers or pencils, and let's talk about what you want your life to look like. You can make it look like anything.
What's your answer to that question, George? I'm curious.
In terms of just the whole thing, or?
In terms of how you think about work and life and balancing those two, and how long you want to work, what types of work you want to do.
I found that I it's helpful for me to break down my life into six different areas. So instead of thinking about life, because I can't get my arms or my head around that. So I think about what I want for my family, my community, for my work, and for my finances. I kind of lump those together. Maybe I shouldn't. From a well-being perspective, so my physical health and mental and spiritual. From a learning perspective, so personal development, what do I want to do just for the sake of learning? And then finally, from a kind of a peace of mind spiritual. And so when I break it down like that, I don't want to say attack the problem, but it just helps me to kind of get clarity or give myself prompts a little bit more, as opposed to just sort of being overwhelmed with, oh my God, I have no idea. I don't even know where to start. So.
Yeah. I love that. I don't know if you've ever encountered a exercise out there called the Wheel of Life. I highly encourage anyone to Google it. It should be one of the first things that pops up on like a Google image search, but it effectively breaks life down into these different components, not too dissimilar to the ones that you just mentioned. And the idea behind it is, if you imagine a wheel with different spokes, each of those facets of life is a spoke on the wheel. And you're meant to effectively rate on a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being, you know, I'm so far from ideal in this particular area of life, and 10 being, you know, everything's perfect. I couldn't imagine it being any better. Then you just kind of rate on a scale of 1 to 10, you know, how are things with my work? How are things with my finances? How are things going with my community? And what's really interesting, I've done this exercise with dozens and dozens of clients at this point. It's just really interesting to see how challenging it is to have all of those maxed out at the same time. You know, we move through life in these different chapters, and in one chapter, you might be scoring really high on certain facets and not so high on others. And then as time goes on, that starts to shift. So I think taking that really high level holistic viewpoint of wellness, and including, you know, not just your working life and your finances, but everything else as well. And looking at that all on one page can be very powerful.
For sure. And I bet people like that. I bet they kind of like to be able to say, oh, you know what, I'm probably right now, I'm probably a 7 or an 8. And which is, and that's probably, sometimes you're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm at 6 or 7. But other times people say, you know, I'm totally fine with that. I'm in the middle of my kids, or we're growing a business. So it's that season of life, but maybe in a couple of years I can revisit it.
Yeah, that's it. I have a 2-year-old almost, and another baby on the way this month, actually. And when I think about like leisure, for example, maybe being one of those facets of life, I'd probably give it a 4 or 5, but honestly, that's great right now. You know, at this stage of my life, I get some time every night to curl up with a book before bed, and I get to walk my dog every morning, and that's plenty for me in this chapter. Whereas, you know, in my 50s or my 60s, if that's all I get to do with my free time, then that might not be as satisfying. But again, back to this idea of different chapters for different moments, right?
Yeah. And all that is predicated on thinking about it and considering what is important to me. What do I want this to look like? I'm here now. I could always be here if I never think about it or do anything about it, but I do have the ability to set an intention, set some goals, and actually put them into action and work towards them.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think you open up that Pandora's box a little bit, you know, just everything kind of bursts open, and it can lead to some really neat outcomes. I think when you start thinking that way, and you know, ultimately when I think about why do we even do this type of work, it really comes back to this idea of regret minimization. You know, when you get to, we're all going to die one day unless technology really progresses in a in a really unexpected way that allows us to be immortal. But assuming we're all going to die one day, you know, we are going to look back on our lives and we're going to ask ourselves, what are we really proud we did? What do we wish we had done that we didn't get a chance to do? And asking these questions while we still have our health or while we still have time, I think that's really the why behind this, is to minimize those long-term regrets.
Because those are real. Those are real. I know I've read about in the past the most common regrets of people on their deathbed. And when you read them, you're like, oh my goodness, I do not want to find myself in that position where I am also filled with those kinds of regrets. So I love that idea of regret minimization. I have to imagine that going through a process like this, having the conversations like we've been having, it then makes the actual financial planning stuff a lot easier.
Yeah, certainly it does. Certainly it does. I mean, every single decision we make in our personal finance, with our personal finances, involves trade-offs, right? Literally every single one of them, even if it's, you know, do I get this term life insurance policy or not? It's like, well, that's going to cost you a little bit of money each month. And is that trade-off worth it, or what's the opportunity cost with those dollars? So when we have this deeper sense of purpose, you know, for me, so much of my purpose is around protecting my family and giving them opportunity. And I know probably a lot of parents out there will resonate with that. Then it's like, well, yeah, my term life insurance costs me $50 a month. And that is the best money that I spend, right? Because if something were to happen to me unexpectedly, I wouldn't want those opportunities to be taken away. So all that is to say, when you've done that work around purpose and understanding what's important, you have that lens and you can look at every single decision that comes your way, every single trade-off that comes your way through that lens, and just see it much more clearly.
I think that that's really powerful. It's like one of my favorite quotes from Thomas Sowell is, there's no solutions, there's only trade-offs. And right, the more informed you can, or the better you can get at making decisions, and when what you've been talking about, linking those decisions to whatever is most important to you, that just increases our chances of not, it's never going to be perfect and it's not supposed to be, but it just gets us closer to what we actually want.
Yeah, it's never going to be perfect. And I'll also say it's never going to be static either, right? The just because we've determined, okay, this is what I value, this is my sense of purpose right now, here's the lens I'm going to look at these problems through, that's not going to be the same lens 10 years from now, right? You have to continue to revisit these things. When I think about, I'm 37 now, when I think about what was important to me back when I was 25, you know, the values then were, how do I adventure? How do I get out in the world? How do I have experiences? How do I meet lots of different and interesting people? And it's not that I don't care about those things now. I've carried those values with me today, and we still love to travel as a family, but when I think about my core values and what's most important and what's most deserving of my time and my attention and my financial resources, the answer is just a lot different now. And so I think leaving space for that evolution and that growth is important too.
Yeah. Like, it's a really, really healthy thing for sure. And a 2-year-old and one on the way this month coming up. Well, that'll certainly make things more fun also. Andy, are you ready?
I think we're getting there. We're going to be putting, due date is December 31st. We're going to be putting the crib together this weekend. Fortunately, all the stuff we used for baby number one can pretty much get reused for baby number two. So I will say there's a lot less anxiety going into baby number two than baby number one. But, you know, there's always those fears around loss of sleep and loss of free time and the normal anxieties that come along with welcoming a new family member. But all things considered, being a dad is certainly the most fun I've ever had. And I'm just expecting that to double with number two. So we'll see. You might have to bring me on to see if that turned out to be the case at some point.
I love it. Let's just plan to do that. So exciting times, going from one to two, and maybe who knows, Andy, 2 to 3 or 3 to 4, 5 to 6, whatever.
Hey, depends who you talk to. If you talk to my wife, on a good day, she'd probably say 3. You talk to me on pretty much any day, I'm good at stopping at 2, but we'll see. You know, I'm okay. Happy to explore the third potential. You never know what's going to happen. Like we said, you got to leave room for that evolution, right?
Got to leave room. Different seasons of life. I love it. Well, Andy, we are ready for that difference-making tip. What do you have for us?
My tip for everyone is something that, you know, I just recently had a birthday and I looked back on the last year or so on what was the one lesson that I learned this past year that was most valuable. And it's what I'll share with you today. And it is sort of a two-parter. So find your community and then do your work in public. And what I mean by that is, you know, find your community, meaning find the people that you really resonate with, whether that be in a professional setting, that's where I learned this, but it could be other settings as well. But really find the people who are like-minded enough that you feel at home, but not so like-minded that you don't have plenty of new ideas to share with each other. But then once you've found that community, you know, anytime you're doing especially creative work, really share that work with those people. The specific example I'll give is actually tying back to this idea of a statement of financial purpose. I had created an exercise to help clients establish a statement of financial purpose. And I shared that with some folks in my community, a professional group of other advisors called the Society of Advice that was put together by Carl Richards. And anyway, long story short, I shared that. It got passed around a little bit. And now Carl and myself and our friend Jeremy Walter are all working together to create a course for fellow advisors. And, you know, if you had told me a year ago that I would get to work with those two guys on a project, my head would have just exploded. It wouldn't have felt even remotely possible to me because they were just two people I had looked up to for so long. And by finding that community, sharing my work in public, one thing led to another. And now I'm involved in this project that I'm just incredibly excited about, incredibly excited to bring to the advisory community. And it never would have happened if I hadn't shared it in public. So that was a big lesson for me this year.
Well, I think that is great stuff that definitely gets a come on. Andy, I love everything about that. I love everything about reviewing your year, talking about what you've learned. I think that's super cool and something that I do as well. And scratching your creative itch and letting your inner artist or creative or however you think about it, do that work, but then taking it the next step further and sharing it and look what's come out of it. I think that's totally incredible. So well done.
Thanks, George.
Yeah. And thank you so much for coming on. Where can people learn more about you?
No, I hate to say it. I'm not terribly active on social media, but the one place I am fairly active is LinkedIn. So you can certainly find me on LinkedIn. You can read my bio at theplanningcenter.com. Planning Center is the name of the firm that I work for. Or you can reach out to me directly at andy@theplanningcenter.com.
Excellent. If you enjoyed this as much as I did, go to theplanningcenter.com and find Andy Baxley. Find Andy on LinkedIn as well. And I will link all of those in the notes of the show. Thanks again, Andy.
Thanks, George. Great to be here.
And finally, a friendly reminder that there will never be anybody more interested in your financial success than you are. So act accordingly.